Sometimes it's a Thursday. This time it's a Friday when we get the proverbial view from the north. He sure made the introductory element of the interview more efficient, because now it's of The Athletic. And by the way, subscribe, support quality sports journalism. Believe me, we need it. On Twitter, it's at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, on the eve of the 2019 college football season, how are you?
I am doing well, but I'm a little disappointed in you, man.
Why?
A little bit. What Ali knocked out Foreman in 74.
What did I say?
You said 78.
Oh, no, I knew it was 74. That was just a misstep. That's brutal. No, that's a
demerit. I know you knew. I know you knew.
No, we actually have three piles here. I have to put single. I owe a buck because of that. If I brick one like that, it costs me a dollar. So that's good. By the way, do you know where I'm getting all this from? At Twitter Sports just tweeted out about 45 minutes ago, what sporting event do you wish you could have been there and tweeted about? And, oh, man, it's all coming in. There's a lot of good things, from the O.J. Chase to the Miracle on Ice to the Kirk Gibson homer, a Buckner through the legs. It's a good one. It's wasted a good hour and a half of my life.
Mine would have been the Super Bowl champion, the Bears winning the Super Bowl, and my tweets would have been, what the hell is wrong with Dick to give Walter the ball?
Instead of Fridge.
Dude, Fridge scored, Matsui scored, and McMahon had two rushing touchdowns. 1 yard touchdown run. You couldn't give the ball to Peyton there?
So
just to give him a touchdown. I'm still pissed about that. It was 34 years ago or whatever.
No, you're not alone. It surfaces every time there's like a special on sweetness. But as the protectorate of the Jordan Legacy Pacific Northwest Division.
thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to put that on my business card.
You should. Is the Jordan moment. The come fly with me in the dunk contest, the shrug against Portland in 92, or the that's it, everybody go home against Utah in 98?
Which is my favorite moment?
Yeah.
Out of those three, definitely the 98 shot. The way he holds the hand up there.
Yep.
As it goes in, like pauses for a couple seconds, and then runs down the court, and the faces of the Utah fans behind that. And I actually was watching that with a college buddy of mine. I was up in Tacoma doing something, and I stayed with him, and we watched that game together. And we were just jumping up and down, hugging and stuff, so that was awesome. And he kind of felt like it might be his last game with the Bulls, but I still think it's sort of like the Kenny Wheaton moment in Bulls history. It's like it was an important moment. It was a launching pad moment, but not the most important moment because they did things better in the future. But the shot over Elo.
Oh.
If they lose that series, that was a first-round series. They lose that. I mean, you can't say that they still wouldn't have been great, but that series catapulted them to the second round. They ended up making it to the East Finals that year, and that was like a big moment because everyone thought they were going to get swept by Cleveland. So that still, for me, is my single probably favorite moment, plus the level of difficulty on the shot, the way he double-clutched in the air and hung in there for the extra second. I love that moment.
Yeah, there was also the Marv Albert spectacular shot against the Lakers, the bullet pass inside to Wennington to rip the Knicks' hearts out. Oh, there's just so many of them.
The double nickel?
Yeah.
The double nickel night?
Yep. Believe me, I remember that. Like it was. I never flipped off the TV so many times in one game. All right, let's get in to a little bit of NFL as we continue with Aaron Fentress. We're talking about Marcus Mariota. It's the final year of his deal. Certainly around here, you got to be careful because folks get a little defensive, but there are legitimate claims. There has not been stability at coordinator. There's been a lack of, I guess, consistent targets. So how would you evaluate Marcus's pro career thus far and maybe how much heat is on him this year to perform better because it's the last year of his contract?
Yeah, he's a fascinating case because I don't think anyone can really say he's played poorly when everything around him is optimal. And by optimal, I mean like you know, he's being carried. I mean, it's just things aren't falling apart. When the O-line is solid, when the running game is there, when he has his targets, he's been really good and sometimes just amazing. But, you know, it seems like every other year there's something wrong, with whether the running game went south in his third year and he got injured, or last year they lost to Delanie Walker at the beginning of the year, or the changing of coaches every other year, new coordinators. It's just insane that someone has to deal with that at the quarterback position. But I think if he's in a stable situation and he stays healthy, I think he can be really good. I don't think he's going to be elite. I don't think he's ever going to be on par with the Brady, Breezes, Rodgers of the world. I think that ship has sailed for both him and Winston.
Right.
But I still think they can both be good and win in the league. Like, he could still be a very productive and good winning quarterback. But this year, man, this is kind of a make or break. And they got Tannehill for a reason. One, because last year when Mariota got injured, had they had a Tannehill, they might have won that one extra game to get to the playoffs, as opposed to going with Blaine Gabbert. And two, they have someone who has had success, and his numbers are just as good overall, if not better, than Mariota's over his career. He can produce, so they know they have someone they can turn to if Mariota struggles, which I don't think he's going to do. But the fact that they haven't extended him yet is basically saying, okay, you got to prove it to us, man. And Marcus could either get a new deal with them or end up a backup somewhere else. He could end up being someone else's Tannehill next year. That's very possible.
Hmm. Good take. Let's combine your two beats, Ducks and Seahawks. Ugo Amadi, number 28. I always felt he was just one of those guys that's just a great football player, but you got to assign a guy a position. So
right.
whether it's the great punt cover we saw against Olabisi Johnson to fighting for a spot in a really good secondary, what's the word maybe about his status with that team right now?
Well, they love him. I mean, they definitely like him. They took him because they love his versatility. And Pete Carroll's all about DBs. We all know that. He's a former DB guy.
Right.
Former. He still has his hands on with the secondary. He loves that position, both those positions, mainly corner. But they love his intelligence. He's lived up to that. He's learning everything they want him to learn. He's in competition at nickel. He's in competition for a backup safety spot. They are very deep, though, in the secondary. But he could force them to keep maybe 10, you know, this year. I would say he's definitely on the bubble because there is tight competition, but I do not believe they're going to let him go. If they did let him go on cutdown day, there's no way they get him on the practice squad. He would be scooped up someplace else. And I went back and looked, actually, at all 10 drafts for the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era, which is 10 years, and they've only had one guy, DB, that they've drafted inside of five rounds that did not make the team. And I literally just looked this up an hour ago for something I'm writing about, and I can't remember the guy's name. But it was a fifth-round pick, their first draft, 2010. He did not make the team, ended up on a couple practice squads around the league, and then never, I don't think he ever played an NFL game. So inside of four rounds, though, and that's out of 10 guys, inside of four rounds, they've never released anyone they've selected at the defensive back position. So this would be unprecedented for them to let him go. I do not think it's going to happen. I do not think he's going to be starting nickel. They've got some nice corners that they like who I think are going to be better suited for that at the NFL level. But I think he'll be a guy who plays special teams, and he's a number four safety.
All right. I agree with you that he's going to be an NFL player. It's a matter of where he takes his mail.
right.
Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. The receiving core for the Seahawks, you wrote a great story, David Moore, out of East Central Oklahoma, looking to become the most famous guy from that school since Mark Gastineau. His third season, didn't really play as a rookie, more last year. For folks not yet familiar, what could you tell us about him, how he's coming along, and what his role might be?
Yeah, I dove deep into his business. I went back to junior high school coaches,
sure did.
High school coaches, college coaches, both parents, agent, et cetera. He's a true self-made guy. I mean, they all are, but he's a guy who picked himself up from an under-recruited high school kid who wanted to be a receiver. No one wanted him as that. They wanted him as a DB at the major college level. He went D2 route. I mean, think about that. He chose D2 over being a major college player because he wanted to play receiver. I don't know how many people would do that, but he did that, and it's paid off for him. Now, problem is, Pete Carroll just announced today that I guess in practice yesterday, or yeah, I think it was yesterday, Moore came down wrong on his shoulder and is out for a couple of weeks.
Great.
So someone on Twitter was just telling me I cursed him with my article. but he may only be out for a few weeks. But you know, he's the thing about him is that he's 6'1", 220. He's really thick and strong and physical. He's ran a 4.42, so he can run. And he just looks like a guy who just still needs more polishing, but he's become more polished every year. And he got off to a really good start last year when Baldwin was kind of gimpy, and when Baldwin came back, Moore sort of disappeared. And part of that was he was only pretty much useful on the outside, and he wasn't very good in the slot, so he didn't play as much when Baldwin came back because he just had other people that were just more experienced and better. But with Baldwin gone and during the offseason, according to Pete Carroll, he's become more of an all-around better receiver. So they have high hopes for him to take another step this season. We'll see how much the shoulder injuries holds him back. But he's definitely someone who, you know, like you said, if you're going to play in the NFL, it's just a matter of where. I think if he doesn't work out here, he's going to be a guy that someone else is going to pick up on down the road. I think they really like him a lot. He's in the mix.
Before our last question, was the guy you were thinking of, E.J. Wilson out of North Carolina, who was a Seahawk drafted in 2010 in the fourth round, who really never got on the field?
He played, though, I think. Was the next guy?
He played
was there
two
a games.
Guy
that year? Yeah, he played, though.
Oh, I see. All right, so it's got to be a guy who didn't play. All right.
There's only one guy who's never made that. There's only one guy in the top five rounds, DB, that never played a down.
Mark LeGree out of App State in 2011.
I knew it was left something.
All right, last question. We were talking about receivers. Brendan Schooler gets injured. Then the electrifying freshman, Pittman. Then the Juwan Johnson, who at least they're saying should be okay. How concerned should fans be about, right now as we speak, Herbert's targets at wideout?
Yeah, that's not what you want to hear. Schooler, Juwan, far more, disconcerting to me than Pittman. I think I talked last week about freshman impact. You brought up Huff, which is a good guy to bring up, but Huff only had 300 yards and 3 touchdowns as a true freshman. It's like he lit the world on fire. So the idea that Pittman was going to light it up, I don't buy that. But he's depth, right?
Yep.
So when you lose him and then Schooler's out for Pittman, is Pittman out 8 weeks? Is it eight?
6 to 8, I think.
6 to 8, and same thing with Schooler. Thank God Johnson's supposed to be back for the next game. But, yeah, on paper, that's two of your top five or six guys going down, and you already were wondering about that crew anyway. That puts a lot of pressure on, the Reds of the world. And my guy, JJ3, man, I love that guy. Here's the thing. It's like he's become forgotten because maybe last year he disappeared a little bit, but I think people forget sometimes, man. Sometimes you just got to evolve.
Right.
Like, guys evolve. And so he's going into his third year. He has experience. There's no way he's not going to be better. We all know he can run. We've seen him run. We all know he can make great catches. I think that guy is going to have a breakout season. And I think it's going to be one of those situations where it's just proof that just because someone struggles early, don't ignore him. People get so caught up in recruiting that they forget the other guys who were recruited 2 or 3 years ago who maybe haven't been stars yet, and they think the new guys are going to come in and light the world on fire, and then who turns out to be the players? Well, the guys who are, juniors and seniors, and that's how it should be. So I think Johnson's going to make up for whatever's wrong with Pittman, but depth is definitely a concern.
All right. Good stuff as always. Enjoy the first weekend of college football. On Twitter, it's at Aaron J. Fentress of The Athletic. Good stuff, my friend. Enjoy, and look forward to talking next week.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, take it easy.